Welcome to Starfleet Universe On-Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have talk guests every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 724-444-7444. Just follow the directions. Call ID is 170-702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, you need to reach me via Skype. My Skype ID is Franz Games, FranzGames. And of course, you can follow me on the Twitter. My account there is Paul Franz. So to find me there, just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. That's PAULFRANZ. And of course, I have a second account called sfuoncall. That's sfuoncall. On Twitter, and also, of course, Franz Games, where I previously were announcing the podcast, but now I'm doing it on SFU On Call. Now, moving forward, we have, of course, this lovely talk guest gets turned into a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B this week. We have, of course, the Warehouse 23 Drive-Thru RPG and War Game Vault this week is Nexus number 5. So they've scanned it in, made it available for your viewing pleasure. Steve Cole is busy working on Capsulog number 53, of course, the blogs and newsletters, and, of course, Shapeways. Steve Petrick was busy working on various SFB updates and also the Gorn Master Starship book. Gene was working on the newsletter, managing the Facebook page and also the Twitter feed, and, of course, keeping the spammers off the BBS and uploading those PDFs, which are the Nexus number 5. Moving forward to the SFB Online tournaments going on at this moment, we have, of course, the Masters 2018 tournament. Tree is posted on BBS. I still haven't posted it on the website. Please forgive me for that. I should be able to get that done tomorrow. I'm not working tomorrow, so I should be able to get it posted tomorrow, and I apologize for the delay. When it comes to the RAT 48 tournament run by John Brimeyer, so far 13 signups so far. Remember that the deadline is June 3rd, so please sign up quickly. And when it comes to the semifinals, we have Ted versus Peter. They were supposed to play tonight, something happened and they were unable to play, so they're rescheduling for next Thursday. So hopefully we'll see a final starting very soon on the Platinum Hat Tournament, which would be fantastic, and get it done in a timely fashion. That would be absolutely great. Moving forward, when it comes to the online client, actually, there's nothing other than the Add a Stripe feature where I did the previous week. There's been nothing really going on there. When it comes to the library, there's actually been no progress except for some miscellaneous updates that have been done for it. According to Frank, he's not seeing one of the updates, so I will have to double check on that. And just to let you know, the complete conversions are 2411, and yet to be converted is 918. Yes, we're still stuck at the same old numbers. There's a percent complete, it's 72.42%. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, yes, the one and the only Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we've got me, we got Dave, and surprise, surprise, we have Barry. How you doing, Barry?
Hey there.
Staying out of trouble?
I am. Just been unbelievably busy. Every time I want to call, it's like, oh, there's something going on.
Understood. Hey, that's fine. Those things happen. Well, to get on to the topic for this evening.
We have a topic for this evening.
We always have a topic for the evening. Even if it's just, whatever, I've flying by the seat of my pants, which has happened a few times. And just so that because I know you missed it, I'm pretty sure you missed it anyway, which was I've been doing this podcast for over 10 years now.
Wow.
Yep.
I know it's been a while. Wow.
Oh, I didn't realize how much it was until back in March. Yeah, March. When I just happened to look, I went to Talkshoe and went, okay, let's go back to the beginning. Let's see, what's the first podcast I have on this thing? And I went back and I found out it was April 10th of 2008. It was my first recorded episode.
Wow.
Yep. I celebrated my 10-year anniversary a while back there, and actually had ADB come on for a little bit to say hello and congratulate me on doing a podcast for 10 years and all that. So
what have I missed in the months and months I've been gone?
Oh boy. That could add up to be quite a bit.
Let me guess. They reissued Omega and they made it right.
No.
They actually play tested it, right?
No. When it comes to SFB and what ADB is doing, not much. Most of it obviously has been Shapeways.
Yeah.
That's been the main focus there. They've gotten ton of more ships. Obviously, one thing they have been focusing on a lot when it comes to Shapeways is expanding the offerings when it comes to non-alpha empires.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's see, do we have it here? We might. Let me see if I can find it real fast. Shapeways store. I always forget Shapeways is more than just miniatures. Yeah, the Olanda, the Chlorophon, the Drex, the Iridani, Caligar, Mazeron, the Prober, Troban, and Vari.
Well, that hit most of the majors.
Yep. And they have a,
I mean, you missed the Hivers, and you missed the Rin, and you missed the Quixa, and Soldra, mm-hmm. and who are the butterfly guys again? Laurelil?
The Laurel.
And who's the other one that's they have really weird ships with the PPD on steroids. Oh yeah, it was I think Ken Burnside said he took one of their 85 BPD destroyers and said, oh, I think this thing's a little overpowered. And they're like, no, it's not. It's fine. And then he took it, and he matched it up against a intruder.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time the intruder reached 15 hexes distance, he had already punched the forward PAs.
Dang. That's 80 points of damage right there.
Yeah. And then by the time it got to a range of 10 hexes, half the internals were gone.
I think that's a little overpowered. Oh, jeez.
For an 85 BPV destroyer, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that sounds like something more worth over 300. Geez, because the intruder's, if I recall correctly, the intruder is worth 265.
Right.
So that's quite a difference there. But yeah, they've been adding to that. Of course, they've been adding to the
And at range 10, an intruder isn't going to do much damage to anything.
Oh no, it's not. You know, and obviously, if an intruder's coming in by itself, it can jump in a little quicker, you know, using a displacement to jump the range. But still, you know.
Oh, yeah. It got to range 10. It jumped in. But half the ship was gone at that point.
Right. But even going from range 15 to range 10. That's what I'm thinking. So you're not taking damage between 5 and 10.
Well, if it had done that, it had gone from 15 to 10. Then by the time it got to range 5 where it could start, three-quarters of the ship would have been gone instead of just half.
Yeah, possibly. Even half the ship was probably, you know, most of the weapons are gone at that point.
Yeah.
But duly noted.
Yeah, that was, I can't remember the name of that race. Oh, and then there were the Dragon guys, the Branson. Yeah, so they don't have that, but you know, all the races they missed were the ones that are like almost impossible to balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, you know, even the ones that are impossible to balance doesn't mean they can't have their own ships. I think the L'Oreal, would be kind of cool.
Oh, actually, the L'Oreals were actually fairly easy to balance. They were actually a fun race to play and to fight.
Mm-hmm.
I think they had really, really high, they turned on a dime. Kind of like almost like a hummingbird.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think, what's the next turn mode faster than A?
Double A.
Double A. They were either A's or double A's. It was for a cruiser. It was like.
Yeah, it was double A. I mean, that's more. That's jeez. Talk about nimble. Holy freaking cow! That's more nimble than most Ryan ships.
Yeah, it might have just been A. It might have been A. I don't know, but they were. And they had ultra thick shields.
Yeah, the L'Oreal, didn't they have the flame shields also?
They had the flame shields, but the flame shields actually don't provide any shielding.
Right.
What the flame shield does is it says if you attack it with direct fire weapons, the flame shield attacks you.
Right.
So you hit it, and it hits you back.
Right, I know. It's one of those weird systems.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but the L'Oreal had very, very thick shields. They didn't kick out too much damage. But, they had these fireballs, which weren't, I mean, they were like a pretty much a disruptor quality kind of weapon.
Mm-hmm.
With, I think it had some enveloping capability.
Yeah, I'm not that familiar with the Omega weapons, to be honest.
Yeah, it's been so long since I looked at the fireballs. The flame shields were also, they were like cycle time after you used it was horrendous. So it's like, okay, I used the flame shield. Now, if I'm still around in 10 turns, I can recharge it.
Understood. Sounds like something you might want to do when you're coming in on attack run. When you're close, bring up the flame shield so if your opponent decides to hit you, it's going to do more damage to him.
Yeah. Now, the Saldra had a very nice weapon. They had their phased cloak device.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That was, and I've told you before, that's the Romulan, they should have implemented the Romulan, that was the way the Romulan cloak should have been. If they had done that, I think there would have been a lot more people using Romulans because it would have been a much more playable race. First of all, the
Empire.
What's that?
Empire, not race. Empire.
Empire. Sorry, that cloak ran off a capacitor, so you could run at speed 31, charge your weapons, and still be cloaked.
Understood.
But once you activated it, you were taken off the map. It was true hidden movement.
Yeah. Well.
And when you were cloaked, you could not be hit. But you could only, once you hit the cloak button, you were decloaking at 16 impulses or less. Whether, you know, you couldn't stay cloaked for more than 16 impulses. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so it was your get out. And there was like a 128 impulse cool down before you could even recharge the cap, and the cap took like a huge amount of power to recharge, so it was basically a one shot device.
Mm-hmm. Understood.
But it got you out of a tight situation.
Right.
That would have been a good way to implement the cloak.
Understood. But you know, geez. Some people thought that's the way the cloaking worked as it stood when it comes to SFB. At the beginning of Starfleet battles, and it had to be explained that no, that's not the way it worked. And of course, there is always the issue when you actually remove a ship off the board that slows down play, because the person who actually has the ship cloaked has to record where they are going.
Right.
And that's they have to then reveal where they had gone.
Yeah.
And of course, if that person is recording where they're going, you have to record where you're going. You know, the opponent of that person has to record where they're going so that they can verify that nothing hanky-panky occurred. You know, overall.
Right.
So, you know, it makes it a little less fun when you actually have to track things.
Well, and to tell you the truth, that works better in Starfleet Battles Online.
Oh, agreed. When you actually can physically remove ships from being seen on the board.
Yeah. Now, does Starfleet Battles Online have a history function so that when you do decloak, you could see where your ship has been?
I have to double check. I think it does to a certain degree. I just forget how much of a history I keep. I know at the very least I keep one movement, if not more, because you can do an undo on movement, so it records at least one back. But I forget if I actually have it, so you can do multiple undos.
What would be really nice is if you had tails.
Understood.
There's a feature to add.
Oh yeah, that was brought up as there's multiple people who's asked for the tails feature.
Okay.
But here's always the issue with tails. And one, how long do you keep it? That's number one. Number two, how do you represent it? And how many ships do you actually have on the board that you track? Do you only show the tails for like the currently selected ship? Or do you show it for all of the ships all the time?
Well, you could have a couple of properties for the ship. One of the properties is track the tails, and it tails enabled on that item. Or that whether it be a drone or a ship or whatever, so you can have track tails on. And as for how long to track it for. I suppose that when you have a view on, you can set in your view how many impulses back you want to go.
Yeah, but that's for who? Remember one thing, that you control your units. Therefore, you can control when it comes to tails, you can control how many movements that you are tracking.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, if your opponent wants to see your tails, you have to reveal it to that person. And it's only as much as you want to reveal to your opponent.
Because
it's actually an attribute of the ship itself.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
So only the owner of that unit can actually modify anything about that ship.
Right. Now, question. If you reveal tails, can you unreveal the tails?
Yeah, you can hide it, yeah.
Okay. So I could say to my opponent, I'm revealing tails. Oh, you can now see where I've been.
Right. Now, I'm sure there are many people out there who would actually like it so that they actually can see that where their opponent has gone and where they have gone. You know, because usually when people actually want the tails feature, what they want is a pretty graph of where they've been, where their opponent have been, and just see how it all transpired out, like through a whole turn.
Right.
You know? In which case, it's pretty fine when you have two ships. But when you have a fleet of ships, which kind of looks cool to a certain degree, in that you can see a ballet, but in that case, the individual ships gets lost in the fleet. Because I would think you'd only want to have, you want to have a color based on player, not based on ship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or based on unit. Because the question would be, okay, well, how about the drones? Because that's another thing that I'm sure people would love to see, which is, you know, how the drones fly.
Yeah.
Now,
well, another thing is that if you had tails, you could see, especially plasma torpedoes, you could start the tail where the plasma was launched, and it would make it real easy to count how far it had gone.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Though, most of the time, you know, like 95% of the time, the amount of time on the board is equivalent to the distance that it's gone.
Yes.
I understand there are some, which is when it comes to Sabo plasmas, but how many people actually use Sabo?
Well, you can't use it in tournaments, so.
Right. And I know there are some people who play campaign games on SFB Online. I've seen multiple rooms, and I know you're not on Facebook, but I post many screenshots on Facebook of people's campaign games that, you know, I've found while I've logged in. So,
right.
You know, so have seen them.
Well, Sabo actually made a lot of sense and for an open map. Because without it, the Gorns and the Romulans are basically at a severe disadvantage.
Oh, agreed.
You're on an open map. You launch a plasma. The other guy just turns around and runs.
Mm-hmm.
And he can outrun any plasma.
Yeah, and, given,
you know.
more to the point, because you can see the same thing when it comes to drones. You can just run away from drones, but of course the problem is drones last for 3 turns.
Yes.
And 2, drones cost you no energy, cost the person who's launching them no energy.
Right.
So, in theory, here's the thing. In a running battle where it's open space, we're talking tactics here.
Yeah.
In a real battle, in my mind, when it comes to the drones, and there's nothing to fight, that you have to try and make it so that. Yeah, basically, you're trying to kill the fleet, and you have all the time in the world.
Yeah,
you just fly away from the drones. Every single time they launch a set of drones, you just fly away from them.
Right,
because sooner or later they will run out of drones.
Yeah.
Now, for a game, it becomes very boring. To wait for them to run out of drones. And that's the only reason. That's the only reason people actually try to attack the drones to a certain degree. Obviously, if there's only a few drones on the board, you can bot them out of the sky and keep coming.
Right.
But there's a point where you say, well, no, this is not worth it, and you turn away. Instead of trying to plumage through the drones, you just run away. And that's one thing about plasma. Plasma, you never run out. That's when...
Yeah.
That is the key there. Because, a plasma player could just wait for... If they're going against a drone player, all they have to do is go, okay, fine. See ya. I'll keep going and wait for you to run out of drones, and then I'll come in. And I'll try to get you with my plasma, and then you'll run away. We can do this all day long.
Right.
Though, and usually in that case, there's always, then becomes the whole issue of time. There is a, when it comes to strategic factors, there's a point where, if you can only do that for so long before strategically there's other things happening outside of this little tactical situation that, because you might have a screening force that is basically diverts the attention of the opponent so that you can get another force past it.
Well, here's a thought. I remember reading some science fiction novels set in the Star Trek universe, and I think it was they might have been the Alan Dean Foster adaptations of some of the animated series.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember that one. And they were talking about, the Enterprise and the Klingon ship were fighting, and they were firing phasers and shields were up. But the limiting factor seemed to be, our energy reserves are running low. We're running off to recharge. And I said, that actually made for an interesting dynamic. And I said, what would happen in Starfleet battles if you did something like that where shields were relatively thick, but what you did was you said, okay, warp engines so let's say warp engines had 10 units of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And you could use 1 unit of energy per turn from a warp engine. So you have a 30-point box warp engine. And the first turn you use the warp engine, if you use all 30 points, power, but now you've used some of your energy reserves. And over time, that engine can't put out as much energy. It wears out.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like an Orion with engine doubling, where it does permanent damage. So if you don't use your engines all the way, let's say you have a 30-point warp box, or 30 points of warp engines. And let's say that each box holds 10 points of power, so you have 300 total points of power. But each box generates a half a point of power per turn. So if you use less engine power, over time you'll gradually build up your reserves. So it's sort of like a self-recharging battery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which... I agree on the theory of it, because if you really think about it, warp engines are... How are they being powered? By the reaction of antimatter to matter. That's... And then dilithium crystals are focusing that energy. That's my understanding of the tech. Now, the question is, how do they gather the antimatter?
I think they had kind of suggested that... they didn't really say where they were sourcing the antimatter from.
Right. Let's continue.
Yeah. So where would you get the antimatter? Because I don't think that's a naturally occurring resource in this part of the universe.
Right. So it would have to be something that would be kind of almost mined to a certain degree, extracted or whatever.
You can't extract it, because the problem is that when antimatter is around ordinary matter, it usually annihilates and goes away, which is why there's no antimatter in this part of the universe. So, what you would have to do is you would have to have a facility for generating it. So you'd need a power source. So basically, you think of antimatter as a battery that you would have to have some sort of primary power source, say a fusion reactor or something like that, where you're taking energy or other power source, could be nuke or whatever, or even solar for that matter, and you're taking some energy and you're running it through a processor of some kind to create antimatter. And in a sense, you can do that today.
Mm-hmm.
You can manufacture antimatter, but in very, very minute, microscopic, nanoscopic quantities, and it takes a horrendous amount of energy to manufacture antimatter. And I think they're saying that with current technology, if you actually put a price tag on it, the cost of manufacturing antimatter is like $1 billion a microgram. I mean, it's something, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That sounds about right. But
yeah,
I guess the point I'm trying to make is that if antimatter is not, basically, it's not extracted while the ship is moving, i.e., it is saved up and stored up and has to be transferred from these facilities that create the antimatter.
Correct.
It's like a gas tank that ship has.
Right.
That means the limitation might actually not be, limitation of a scenario is time-based in that you will actually can run out of energy to use.
Right.
So
you can only burn the antimatter at a certain rate.
Right. And at some point, either you have to decrease your burn of antimatter or you have to leave. To me, that's what it comes down to.
Or another way of looking at it is the Ken Burnside method, where you're basically saying, I have thermal considerations. Right. If I run my power levels too high, eventually I have to dissipate heat, and I can only radiate heat so much heat, which is a major consideration for a spaceship. I mean, if you think about it, a wet Navy ship, if it has excess heat, you put a radiator out in the ocean, it doesn't take much to provide all the cooling in the world that you need.
Right, because you have the ocean's one big heat sink. But
you got this tremendous heat sink available, and it's easy to couple to that heat sink. But a spaceship, it just, you don't have that heat sink capability. So what do you do with your excess? Because you're basically running a heat engine, mm-hmm. in one form or fashion or another. Now, your hot side could be millions of degrees, which makes it very efficient, but you're still running a heat engine, and you have this waste heat that you got to get rid of.
Right.
And you don't have a heat sink. The only thing you have is radiators, and they're kind of delicate.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. I agreed. I understand that's how Ken Burnside's created his universe, and which makes absolute sense. But, you know, obviously in the Star Trek universe, they kind of ignore that fact.
Oh, I know. Probably because Ken knows a little bit more about physics than the Star Trek writers ever did.
Oh, understood. And come on, most sci-fi writers ignore that whole element of, okay, if you're doing this in outer space, you're producing heat. What are you doing with it?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, but Ken, you know, Ken actually used that as the basis of his game. Part of it is actually managing the heat that's produced by the ship.
Correct. And in fact, he said, at a certain point, you run out of the ability. You can only have so much storage capacity for waste heat. At some point, you got to extend your radiators, which, as he pointed out, are going to be very delicate.
Right.
And so that would be a way of signaling your surrender. Is you extend your radiators, you're basically saying, hey, I surrender. Because the next shot that you hit me with, my radiators are gone, and then I'm dead.
Right. Yeah, because, you know, if I recall correctly, as you pointed out, Ken Burnside says his ships actually have heat sinks that which can absorb the heat internally to a certain degree, in which case, after they absorb as much heat as they can possibly absorb, then you have to extend your radiators just to get rid of the excess heat at that point.
Right.
But the point being that, you know, limited fuel, therefore you know, we can actually limit a game not by time, but by, you know, tracking the extra energy usage on a bigger scale. But, you know, that's not what SSB currently does. They ignore that part of it. Which, you know, come on, let's be honest. We're tracking enough when it comes to Starfleet battles as it stands.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is one thing that you missed, which was of Russ Simpkins, I think I got that right. He actually did a couple of videos of his playtest environment, which is, in my mind, incredible of what he did. Because basically he created a playtesting system which runs in Visio.
Interesting.
He's actually programmed Visio to do certain actions. I mean, this thing's absolutely totally incredible what he's done. I'm sure it's taking a long time to get to the point. You know, he even have SSDs that he has in Visio, so he can click off, you know, damage on the ships.
Yeah.
It you know, the videos are, in my mind, pretty cool about what he did, and that they basically inspired me for you know, different ideas from it. You know, simple things like the ability to export log entries that currently are on SFB Online. Use a selectable counter color. As I said a couple weeks ago, that's not really possible. One idea I had, which I'm still thinking about, which is having the current EA shown beside the SSD, as in the EA for the current turn. So instead of flipping back and forth between the SSD and the EA, for the current turn, you can know how much energy you have, how much reserve power that you have available for that ship at that moment in time. You know, so you can look kind of, that's at the mini EA. It's just that one turn, the current turn shown beside the SD. Because that's the way he has his, which is like, you know, that's actually kind of a neat idea.
Yeah. Oh, here's an interesting one. I have recently, sadly I haven't been playing much SFB lately, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I just discovered one. Have you ever heard of Kerbal Space Program?
No.
That is an interesting program. It allows you to simulate with real world physics a rocket.
Oh, cool.
And I mean, it's just like, and I saw one guy, what's his name? Tom Manley, what's his name? But any case, he came up with Aerojet Rocketdyne announced they had a new rocket, the Omega, and within like 2 days of them making the announcement, Scott Manley, that's the guy's name, Scott Manley, and he had modeled that new rocket in Kerbal Space Program.
Uh-huh.
And basically said, okay, I think this is what the characteristics of this new rocket are going to be. So it's like, oh, okay, somebody designed a rocket. Well, let me simulate it in this Kerbal Space Program sandbox mode to see what, and you can get a pretty good act. And it's like, hey, you know, like, SpaceX has a Falcon Heavy, okay, with two side boosters. Well, what would the performance be like if I added two more side boosters, make it four instead of two? Kerbal Space Program allows you to do that and get pretty good estimates of what the capabilities would be.
Mm-hmm.
That is freaking awesome.
Oh, agreed. That definitely sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
Maybe one of these days I'll play with it. I rarely have time these days.
Yeah. Was it? What, they had the first of the Block 5 Falcon 9s launched. I don't know if you follow that at all.
I follow it. I have not watched it, but I've followed it cursorily. You know, so I know it's going on. I just don't really. I don't find it exciting to me.
What's that?
It's not exciting to me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, having us going into outer space, I think is awesome, and the privatization of space, I think, is a great idea because there's only so much that until we actually find commerce into outer space, a reason for companies to get involved into a space program, you know, getting things into orbit, getting things outside of the orbit of the Earth onto, you know, the moon or possibly other planets, possibly even the asteroids, because when it comes to resources, we're limited here on Earth.
Yeah.
To how much resources we have until, because we're getting to the point where we really need, that's why I started thinking about these things when it comes to our phones and all the phones that are created that are never bought. There's a lot of wasted resources right there, which drives me crazy.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So earlier this year, Gwen Shotwell, the president of SpaceX, not the CEO, but the president of SpaceX, Gwen Shotwell, gave a TED Talk. And one of the things she described in the TED Talk is that she said they've got this new rocket coming, the BFR, Big Falcon Rocket. She said that within 10 years, they will have the price of a ticket on the BFR so low that they are seriously considering. In fact, this is one of she's saying, in 10 years, they will have BFRs being used for point-to-point transport between points on the globe for passenger service. So you can go from, say, New York City to Hong Kong by rocket in about a half hour.
Wow.
And the ticket price she's talking about would be less than a first-class ticket on an aircraft today.
Well, I would like to see that.
That would be freaking amazing.
Oh, agreed. And the question is, because I was actually reading up on the Concorde and what killed it, which are multiple things that killed the Concorde. Obviously, one of the things was that air travel never really bounced back after 9/11.
Yeah.
And, of course, then there's the one crash in France that did not help their situation at all.
Right.
And then
just the ticket prices were so
expensive. And the ticket prices were so high because of the whole idea of you had to be there to meet in person. And there's only so many hours in the day you had. But, you know, after 9/11, there was, of course, the whole increase in web conferencing, the whole idea of video conferencing using the internet, which was good enough, you know. And you can do a lot more of those. So the whole idea of actually being there in person was a lot less needed. Now,
right.
Obviously, I think everyone would agree, from CEOs to presidents to heads of state, would all agree there's nothing. It's still, even with video conferencing and all that kind of thing, that's there's still that division. You know, there's nothing like actually meeting someone in person and like feeding off their vibe or whatever. There's all those signals that occur when you're actually in person, when it comes to body language, when it comes to the way the person looks, you know, how the person reacting, we do much better when it comes to that when we're actually in person than if we're watching this on a video camera online.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
The problem with Concord was it was too expensive and it wasn't fast enough. Okay. Yes, you could cross the Atlantic in, what, 2.5 hours?
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't fast enough. When Shotwell was saying, well, here I am in Los Angeles. I have a meeting in Dubai. I can be in Dubai in 1/2 hour, have my meeting, and be home in time for dinner.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And which will definitely make things interesting. Now, there's two things about that interesting part that you always have to think about, especially in this day and age, which is, of course, the whole issue. Okay, if you can have personal travel to be that fast, you know what you also can do?
Mm-hmm.
Turn it into a weapon. Because just instead of having people have bombs. You know?
Well, I guess you could.
Right. Now, so that's always something you have to be concerned about.
Right. Well, the other thing, well, actually, here's part of it, though, is that they're talking about rockets are noisy. Not like an airplane where you can put a runway right next to a city and get away with it.
Right.
Okay. Rockets are incredibly noisy.
Right.
So a large portion of your trip time to go somewhere is not going to be the rocket ride, but the boat ride to the offshore platform that you launch from.
Right.
So really this would only be usable for coastal cities.
Mm-hmm.
So it might take 45 minutes to get your boat ride from New York City out to the floating platform that you launch from. So if a rocket is coming in and it's actually going to hit a city or something like that, you're going to know ahead of time where it's going.
Mm-hmm. Oh, agreed. But, you know, that's always...
It would have no reason to go within 10 kilometers of land that, you know.
Oh, I understand that. But, you know, when it comes to... But what's the big thing about North Korea? The big thing with North Korea, of course, is ballistic missiles. They have the ability... They've produced the ability to actually have a rocket that actually can be intercontinental, that actually can reach the United States. That's been their goal for a long time. So,
right.
Given that factor there, you know, now we have a private firm that can do the same thing. And so, you know, the whole idea of not obfuscating, but someone hijacking a rocket and to do quite a bit of damage. And can you imagine a rocket actually landing in the middle of a city? How much damage it could actually cause?
Well,
a lot.
But they're not going to land it in the middle of a city.
Oh, I know they wouldn't land in the city. I'm thinking about someone hijacking it and then controlling it to the degree where it actually lands in a city.
Well, the other thing about it is because it's pretty much a ballistic course, and SpaceX has pretty much demonstrated that these things would be completely under computer control. There would be no pilot.
Right.
Because one of the things is that a pilot simply couldn't do that job. I mean, the BFR, they're talking about landing it it's not even going to have landing lights. It's going to land in the same cradle it launched from.
Right.
Or if it's point-to-point travel, it'll launch from a cradle and land in the cradle, meaning that it's got to be precise within inches.
Understood.
That's not something a human can do.
Right. Understood. Understood.
So there's no pilots. So how do you hijack something like that? You can't. There's no cockpit. There's no pilot.
Well, someone hacks into the computer itself that controls it.
If you hack into the computer system, but even if you hack into the computer system, it would take a lot of know-how to redirect where that thing is going.
Oh, yeah. But,
and I guarantee you there will be security systems like you would not believe.
Oh, agreed. I agree there. Then, of course, then there's the whole question of economy. Is there, does economically it make sense? You know, but I digress. Well, you know,
yeah.
We could discuss this whole topic for a lot longer, but you know,
and speaking about which, I've hijacked your entire podcast, haven't I?
Basically, yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. You know, some of it actually was related to SAP and at least space, which is closely related to it, which is fine.
Yeah.
But anyhow, I think I'm going to shut down things. You know, Barry, it's been wonderful to talk to you.
Yeah.
You know.
Let's see. I think May 29th, I'm going to be starting my West Coast adventures.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see more of me, although every other Thursday I'll be flying. So I'll probably miss every other Thursday.
Okay. Cool.
Because those will be flight days.
Mm-hmm. Well.
So, okay.
Until then.
Bye.
Okay, bye. What a night. So we had a nice discussion there with Barry about the things that have actually been happening lately, including the shape waves. I hope, you know, that you enjoyed talking about that. I talked a little bit about SpaceX and rockets and heck, some of the techno babble about Star Trek, you know, and more importantly, you know, another way of actually designing modifying the game, which was this thought about how to limit tactical engagements. Which is currently tactical engagements are limited, and sometimes artificially, from time. You know, okay, the snare can only last this, and by that time, the reinforcements will show up, which is completely valid. But in this case, instead of its reinforcements are going to show up, it's more of, well, you're going to be running low on fuel, and at some point, you will run out of fuel, so you will be stuck there. In which case, your opponent can just walk around you and go, bye-bye. Bye-bye, see you. So, which then becomes a great concern because you can't strategically, you can't have a ship dead in space. Because, and as I pointed out, you know, the whole idea of antimatter is an actual, it might be a limited resource. That might be limiting what it is, and therefore they can consider it as fuel. So, that's one thing I know currently. Starfleet Battles doesn't actually track and doesn't actually, we don't track it that way, which I understand, as I mentioned, you know, we track enough things in SAP, we don't need one more thing. Well, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.